Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. We're going to get started, even though the other two speakers aren't here. They're still doing the elevator speeches. But by then, by the time I'm done, they'll be ready to come down. So I'm going to talk first. I'm Tom Habib, and my topic's intimate couples becoming second-tier explorers and how to create that stable relationship at second tier, at least float up into second tier occasionally. The second speaker is going to be Remy Wagner and Verena Norschwander. Their presentation shows the results of an empirical study of evolution in the psychosexual line of development, both personal and societal. And then the final speaker will be Raymond Fismer. You've all seen him up on stage with a microphone. And he's doing from a male perspective of sexuality, from ego satisfaction to authentic contact. So, without further ado, is there any other relationship that needs an integral map more than the intimate relationship? It's got to be one of the most complex relationships where everything's emerging at once and it ends up in a dramatic display of emotion and chaos oftentimes. So, I want to start with a quote from the Persian poet Rumi. He seemed to get this right 7 decades ago. Your task is not to seek love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you've built against it. And that's what I'm finding when I work with couples. I'm a psychologist and my specialty is with couples. It is their barriers, the developmental barriers that slow them down from realizing the very intimacy they crave. Oh, you want to see that again? So I got to speak slow and flick slow. So 3 premises today. Members in the intro community frequently have second-tier capabilities, but they find themselves in an intimate relationship that floats at first tier. Don't get too depressed on that yet. The intimate relationship versus all other relationships is the most difficult place to create second-tier space. And I'm going to get into some of the nuances why. I know it doesn't seem like it should be that way, but it is. And then attempts to achieve the we space in the intimate relationship will reveal the blocks within each of us that prohibit it from happening. Remember, it's 2 people that are doing it. So if I could rewrite their marital vows for everybody, this is what I would write. Will you take the temper tantrums, the sensitivity, the overreaction, the insecurities, the character defects, the control issues, the unrealistic expectations, the unresolved family issues, and the uncontrolled regressions, for better or for worse? At least they got the last part correct. And notice every one of the quadrants there. And of course, this could be much longer if you really were given informed consent. Did you want another picture? This stuff is all online, and either just YouTube my name or go to the Wisdom Factory, and you have cards and all these documents you can have for nothing. So this is the couples line, and it begins down here at safety and attraction, stage 1, goes to stage 2, stage 3, and we're going to be talking about the transition from stage 3 to stage 4. I have never seen a couple at stage 5. I'm only speculating, using other people's work, how that will show up. And in the chart I left you, I'm contrasting stage 4 and stage 5. So, a brief explanation of each one of these stages, starting at the bottom. Safety and attraction, when we first meet, is a wonderful feeling. It's a wonderful stage that we hope will never end. It's really chemistry and projected ideal that is flowing freely at that moment. And if a couple is really young, as soon as that time ends, because the imperfections in each person that inevitably arise, once they see that, they can't tolerate, and the young couples break up. If you think stage one's gonna last, you're not ready to get married or make a commitment. Because it is reality that throws us out of stage one. And do you notice the romantic movies often end at this stage? Because they don't know where to go. The story gets too complicated and the roadmap isn't out there of what's going on, you know, at that time. So, at the heart of stage one is a pre-transcendent fallacy. And remember how Ken described this. A pre-trans fallacy is the mistaken interpretation that a behavior or motive or understanding originates from a higher stage than it actually does. So it's based upon chemistry and enthusiasm rather than the much more highly evolved things of empathy and understanding. And that only comes later on. I need to slow down. Can you give me an extra few minutes on the presentation, though?
Yeah.
Okay. Good enough, huh? So do you understand that? Because the pre-trans fallacy is what we all live with. It's a lower left cultural message that's ubiquitous in the West. And it drives everything. It drives everything in terms of women are allowed to age, the nonsense around plastic surgery, men idealizing Athena, you know, and wanting that type of love. And it's all looking in the wrong direction where the actual love resides. So it's really, I'm going to write a paper next on that lower left quadrant, taking on some of the deconstruction that you heard yesterday of things that have to be taken out of the thought process so that we know which way to go. Am I going slow enough?
Even much slower, not enough.
Stage two. So reality is what throws everybody into stage two. Is your partner's imperfections show up, your mixed feelings and ambivalence show up, and the dream is assaulted by reality. You retain some of it, but because of the limitations of each person, it changes. And how strongly you react to this stage has a lot to do in predicting future stability in the relationship. And there's two persistent fantasies I don't want you to forget in this stage. The first one is, I got involved with the wrong person. How many of you had that fantasy?
Oh, yeah.
The second one is other people get to live at safety and attraction. Because think, everything in the culture is suggesting that's where the true love arises. Just keep pushing your way in here. There's room up here. Wow. We need a bigger room. No, I don't need that chair. Come on through. Wow. So what are the two persistent fantasies? Yeah, you can. Come on. So the two fantasies is I got involved with the wrong person, and other people get to live at safety and attraction. And they don't. I don't care what the media shows you. They don't. And some of this is going to get resolved when the men's movement finally takes off. Did you want to say something, Raymond? Test one, too. We need a couple up front. Hey, Ellen. Jeez. We need a bigger room. Why don't you make your way down here? You can sit up front. I think we're going to go back a little bit for all the new people. We must be violating the fire laws by now. Okay, so I'm going to go back a slide. Okay, so we're going back to catch you all up on it. So all relationships start at safety and attraction. And this is a wonderful time in the relationship. It's a time we hope beyond all hopes that will continue to go. It's a feeling that popular culture exploits partly, thinking that it can be sustained, but it can't be. It's based upon chemistry and enthusiasm rather than empathy and understanding. And that's at the heart of Wilbur's pre-transcendent fallacy. When I first saw that, I began to understand something about intimacy, and it helped me with the direction I had to understand the developmental line in. So what gets us out of safety and attraction is the reality of the limitations of the partner we're with. No one's perfect. And the opportunity for injury and intimacy is way beyond everything else. So it is that injury, it is the less that our partner isn't perfect that ushers in the second stage, and we're going up in this model, the new people might have missed, which is the role stage. But at the heart is the pre-transcendent fallacy that I just described. It's mistaken chemistry for compassion and understanding. And that happens a lot. There's a lot of pre-trans fallacy in intimacy. So in the role stage, I call this the expulsion from the Garden of Eden. And what's the tree that Eve ate from? The tree of knowledge. And is the knowledge of your partner more fully that creates the exile from the garden? And so in the second stage, we have to lay down all those patterns that make the relationship work, how to work together, how to problem solve, how to give and take, how to fulfill the roles of friendship, mother and father, lovers. All those complicated patterns have to be laid down. And prior to 1964, there were no other stages other than the role stage. It is with the advent of the green level and spiral that the next stage up came into prominence. But one more point here before I move on. In the role stages, the two persistent fantasies, half you already heard. One of the persistent fantasies is, I picked the wrong person. The second persistent fantasy is, other people get to live as safety and attraction. And I don't care what the movies say. I don't care what the popular culture says. You don't discover that relationship, you build it. And it's work to get there. Even at people here that are capable of entering the second tier, it's still work, and we're going to talk about how to do that as I get going. So the third stage is relational. And like I said, this didn't come on until the 60s. This is a monumental leap in development. This is when equality started to set in, at least as an ideal. We're give and take to work in the relationship. We went from a traditional role relationship to we actually try to achieve partnership. And in this stage, the idea of a soulmate began to emerge. They were not capable of realizing it yet, but because of the expansion into the next stage, people could feel into some of the possibilities that I'm going to talk about later on and how to get there. Now, the problem in this stage, too, is the two persistent fantasies, which is what? And the second one? Right. You got to get rid of that fantasy. It doesn't exist. And we don't know that until we get up to the next stage. So, there's a lot more on this. You can just go to either one of these websites, put in my name, Tom Habib, and really good lengthy treatments of this on videos will be there. Or if you want to take a deeper dive from more academic position, go to academia.edu and put my first name in it. And you can hear a lot more on it. But I'll finish this line because we're going to talk about how do we actually get into first love. I only believe this is accessible at this time because, remember, spiritual love I'm speculating about. I've never seen that couple. But I do believe this first love, and I call it first love because you're really finally in love with your partner. You're not in love with that projection anymore. That lower left message is not tormenting you as much when you finally arrive at this level. And this is the way I want to introduce first love, to give you a feel for it first. So imagine if you were sick and you had this great neighbor and they came over, they did a few loads of laundry, they cooked you lunch, they took care of the children, they vacuumed, they went to the dry cleaners and picked up the clothing. Wouldn't that be an incredible neighbor? Wouldn't your gratitude soar and you couldn't wait to reciprocate in terms of this service? When we think about it, that's what our spouses do day in and day out. It's that gratitude on what they're actually doing is the ground upon which we build first love. One of the things I observe as a psychologist clinically watching couples, and that got me thinking about this as I read Wilbur. Why is it that a couple can do 85% of their relationship well, and it's the 15% wrong that becomes 80% of their evaluation and state experience of the relationship? Isn't this true? It's that absolute catastrophizing the limitations because of the vulnerability of intimacy. What a mouthful, huh? It's that catastrophizing of the limitation of the relationship because of the vulnerability of intimacy. Did I say the whole thing? It's pretty good. So this is what put me on to the couples line. When I understood the relationship to the pre-trans fallacy, and I put this all together after reading Wilbur and all that book with all the lines in the back of it, I started thinking about it and said, wow, I can develop a couples line. So this is first love, is when we begin to realize that our partner has sacrificed and they've committed their life to us, day in and day out, to grow, and we look at the abundance of what is rather than overreacting to the ruptures and what isn't, then we're on the path that we need to get there. Now, that's not it. There's going to be a lot more in terms of directives, how we actually do this. So I'm just going to mention this slide for a second, and then we're going to do a deeper dive into spiritual love. This is rarefied ground for the very few. What you have to have online in terms of your own personal practices to show up without backing away is probably way beyond certainly my ability. My wife, Christine, and I can only float up into first love occasionally when we're mindful of those moments. I've never seen a couple that can do this yet. And you have this handout. So I just want to give you a feel for what's involved both in first love and in spiritual love, what you have to have online. So look, in first love, there's increasing awareness of shadow. In spiritual love, shadow signals an opportunity for more growth. They're going, whoa, I didn't see that. Let's go further. All the upper right visceral reaction is calm down. Sometimes when I get a couple to look at each other, they practically levitate on the couch out of panic. So you can see how much has to come online. So number two, some ability to look at yourself while your partner observes. They're looking at you in a transparent way. They said I could have extra time. Here, it's quick adjustments. I mean, here the transparency is there. There's total transparency while your partner observes. So I'm going to let you read through some of these because we're going to run out of time. And you can do these yourself and feel the nuances of the differences, but it's a tall order. Christine said to me, do you want to say something quick? Yeah, no propensity for lower left pre-trans fallacies. That the way they relate to the lower left is much more realistic. They understand the difference between the ideal and the reality. They don't get confused. It doesn't set up all that longing for what isn't. It's wanting what you want, as Sheryl Crow said in a song once. But I do want to get to the directives because this is really the good stuff. Okay. So we're going to talk about how we get from here to there, because that's what's actually is accessible. And the goal is to develop first love, and we're going to prolong moments of resonance and shared feeling. That's how we're going to do it. And we're deciding with our partner ahead of time, you're going to look into each other's eyes for 30 seconds. That's not too bad, is it? 30 seconds, but we're going to use an external source of poignancy and intensity to generate the pathway between us. Can you feel that with me? So watch. So we use an emotionally laden moment, like a movie, music. Usually in movies, what I love, you know what, if you have children, when a child is struggling and they start to achieve something and we feel it so deeply and we're choking on it, we're deciding for 10 to 30 seconds not to look away, to look at each other, calm it down, try not to smile or laugh, because it grooves a pathway of empathy, I'm finding, when we do that. So you decide ahead of time and you do it. Now you have to do it 6 to 9 times before it develops some traction. So number two. So there's number one, prolong eye contact. Once you've done it 6 to 9 times, you're trying to feel beyond that moment and try to feel for all the mothers and fathers, if that's the moment you're using, that have struggled with children before. Are you with me? So it's the resonance that seems to be there all the time. Like when I walk in some of those great cathedrals, I can feel people at their higher selves for hundreds of years there. I don't know what it is. But that's the resonance you're trying to feel once you have step one done. Notice how it becomes easier to enter this space once you've done it a number of times. You begin to slip right into it because that pathway's there. You've calmed down the physiology. You've developed it. Okay, I'm going to race. Notice the commonality in countless other people. We begin to initiate this we space. We don't need the movie anymore. We just do it with the look of the eye. You know, that eye contact. And it opens up that sacred space. Can you feel that with me? You've probably done it with other people here. But one of the reasons it's so hard to do it with an intimate partner is you've got to compartmentalize the times they've hurt you. Do you understand compartmentalize? You put it aside, and you don't let it contaminate this moment. Because often people, when they go to the vulnerability, they access vulnerability because of deficit and damage. So you got to compartmentalize that to open the positive space. So the rest of this online, I'm running out of time, and we had to slow this down a little bit. The rest of this is online, the steps. Take a look at some of the videos, and you can see how to do this. And I'd love to hear feedback, how well this works for you, because this is very much a model in development. Thank you very much for all of you coming.